Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I want to hear cannons. Outfield, pull up, ball to the five, touchdown Tampa Bay. Mike Evans does it again. Fire the cannons, Bucks.
It's first and goal. That's picked off. That's picked off. And who else? Rondé Barber. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may ride to the Super Bowl with that one.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Goes up to the
head. It's intercepted. Derek Brooks, 30. Brooks to the 29. He's got Derek Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
And there the cannons go. Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Hello, Bucks fans, and welcome back to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast live on YouTube today for the 2023 season review show. Believe it or not, I was just telling Evan before we started the podcast, it has been over 2 years since we have done a season review show. One of the staples of our show, the first 5 years we were around, at the beginning of the season, we would do our season predictions. And at the end of every regular season, or whenever the Bucks were done playing, we would do our season review show where we would look back at our predictions from the beginning of the year and kind of break down how the season went, recap all the ebbs and flows of the NFL season. And this is the 2023 edition, but it is a nice return to form because I was shocked when I found out we had not done this in quite some time, Evan.
Yeah, I was too. I was like, really? When you got on and told me that, I was like, could have swore at least one of the 2021 or 2022 we did, but apparently we did not. So this is the season review show and the first one in a little bit, with that. So, and actually, technically, it'd be the first one in 3 years because the Bucks won the Super Bowl in 2021. It's 2024, so it's the first one in 3 years. So hopefully, we can shake off the rust a little bit and remember how to do this sort of podcast. I think we've mastered the season prediction show. And admittedly, I'll admit it. Like that's my favorite show of the year that we do anyway, but yeah. Like always like that one more than the review, because the review, like, and look, we're going to keep this simple for you guys. Okay. Like we're not going to sit here and say, well, the Vikings game, they won 20-17 and the turning point, we're going to do it in sections. So we're not boring you guys to death with stuff you've already known. But the season prediction show, the football's right around the corner. The weather's still pretty nice. You're about to get football after not having it for months. And then the season review show, we're just, sort of talking, but I think it's a necessary thing because it gives us time to look at perspective. I think that's important. So we will see where it takes us. And like I said, hopefully we can shake off that that little bit of ring rust there.
Yeah, before we dive into the 2023 Tampa Bay Buccaneers season, wanted to get you guys caught up on the latest headlines regarding the search for a new offensive coordinator. Now, there is some real-time Buccaneer news that we got to make sure we keep you updated on. So, Evan, the Bucs have had a huge list of offensive coordinators this week that either they have brought to town to interview, intended to bring to town to interview, or still hope to talk to here over the next few days.
Yeah, I mean, there's three guys that they intended to interview. They wanted to interview, unfortunately. The timing, with Dave Canales not really working in the Bucks' favor. Dave Canales takes that Carolina job, and look, like it's nobody's fault, really. It's not the Bucks' fault. It's not Dave Canales' fault. It's just, he's hired late in the process, kind of after the Bucks, after the second round of the playoffs. And by that point, a lot of these teams had sort of already gone through their processes, and those coaches have already gone through some interviews with some teams. So the Bucks wanted to interview Kellen Moore. He took the Philadelphia Eagles job. They wanted to interview Zach Robinson. He took the Atlanta Falcons job, joining Raheem Morris. And then they also wanted to interview Ken Dorsey, and he ended up taking the Cleveland Browns job last night. So, yeah, we have three guys you can cross off the list right there. The Bucks didn't even get a shot to interview them. But the ones they will be interviewing, Brian Johnson, the former Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator, who, I mean, I know was a hot name last year, for the, especially, you know, for the Bucks OC search that time around. And then also the big list, which came out sort of today, gathered it today, Alex Van Pelt, who was the former Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, Gerard Johnson, who's a former NFL quarterback, Houston Texans quarterbacks coach, Jake Peets, who is the Rams passing game coordinator, and Anton Randall-L, who was obviously in Tampa Bay as an offensive assistant, is now the wide receivers coach for the Lions. Alex Van Pelt and Jake Peets both do have some experience with Baker Mayfield. Of course, Van Pelt being Baker Mayfield's offensive coordinator in Cleveland for a little bit, and Peets, very little time was spent with Baker Mayfield, but Peets was around when Baker was in LA for that short period of time at the end of the 2022 season. So Bucks continue their search. There may be more names added. I think, you know, Thad Lewis, I didn't really get my thoughts out on this, obviously. Thanks to, you know, to James for covering for me when the news broke. Didn't expect that, you know, we would have to cover that at all, honestly. I didn't expect Canales to get that job, and I didn't expect it to drop in the middle of a Thursday. So was not prepared. So shout out James for stepping in. But I think Thad Lewis still makes sense. Now, he hasn't received an interview yet, which is interesting, but I still think he could make some sense. And then there might be some names on, like, the 49ers or Chiefs that the Buccaneers could be looking at. They interviewed Clint Kubiak last year. Clint Kubiak is now with the 49ers. So if the Buccaneers wanted to hire him, they're going to have to wait till after the Super Bowl. Brian Greasy is the 49ers quarterbacks coach. He's gotten a little bit of buzz for an offensive coordinator role. So if they wanted to hire a guy like him, again, they'd have to wait till the end of the Super Bowl. So I do think that the Buccaneers may not want to wait that long. So I don't think they're going to wait until the Super Bowl to hire a guy. But it does appear, you know, that they're broadening their list. And honestly, it's even a bigger list than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was pretty clear that it was going to be Thad Lewis. I didn't think it was going to be instant, right? Like, I didn't think it was going to be Thursday night they named Thad Lewis offensive coordinator, but it's clear, you know, they're putting out a pretty big list, and they want to hire the best candidate possible. So that's just an update there. Obviously, once they hire an offensive coordinator, we will obviously do a full podcast on that. But in the meantime, if they interview anybody else, probably plan on putting that in video form, just for like the interview wise, that sort of news. So stay tuned to that. And also we will have, and I'm going to announce this now, we were waiting until after the season review show. We will be having positional reviews on Mr. Bucks Nation. When I was working with him, I did the positional previews where I went through each position group and just previewed how that went. This time around, I'm going to be doing the reviews. So how did Baker Mayfield do, right? How did the running back room do with Rashad White taking the reins and Chase Edmonds? Was Sean Tucker a big factor? Sort of examples like that. So stay tuned for that. Plenty of video form for you guys. Even though our podcast content won't be three times a week anymore, we're still going to be having plenty of content for you guys. And, you know, Rhett has been posting those shorts, which have been, you know, fantastic. So plenty of content here.
Absolutely. Looking forward to another offseason of coverage, and we will keep you guys updated every step of the way. But let's dive into the 2023 NFL season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers heading into this season were coming off of an 8-9 record. They did have Tom Brady as quarterback, and they did make the postseason, winning their division. They got absolutely walloped by the Dallas Cowboys in the wild card round in a home playoff game to wrap up the 2022 season. Todd Bowles returned as head coach. He had a chance to move on from Byron Leftwich as offensive coordinator, made some changes to his staff, and brought in Dave Canales, who did so well. He's no longer here. So
did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I would think the Bucs did a pretty good job with that hire, but a lot of expectations and a lot of lofty expectations for the Bucs. I think this is the most divisive I have seen predictions before a season in quite some time. I think coming into the season, we had to talk to a lot of people and say, hey, there's a lot of level-headed people who are predicting this team to win anywhere from 5 to 10 games. But you had to kind of block out the noise from the national media expecting the Bucs to be maybe the second or third worst team in the league. There were a lot of national pundits who had the Buccaneers drafting Caleb Williams in April. And, you know, with a new quarterback, a new offensive coordinator who just so happens to be a first-year play caller, there was a lot on the line. Moving Tristan Wirfs to left tackle from right tackle, moving Luke Goedeke over to right tackle as your full-time starter. Rashad White was going to be taking on an increased role as your starting running back. There was a lot of things that had to go right for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win some games this year. So let's talk about this opening stretch. The first four games, the Bucs open the regular season on the road at Minnesota. They go home in week two against the Bears. On Monday Night Football week three, they host the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending NFC champions. And on Sunday, October 1st, week four, right before the bye week, they travel to New Orleans for a division matchup against the Saints. In that stretch, they beat the Vikings 20-17 in week one. They open up at home with a win over the Bears 27-17. They lose to the Eagles on Monday Night Football 25-11, their first disappointing performance of the season. And then a huge division win to make them 3-1 headed into the bye week in New Orleans, 26-9. They dominated that game. Baker Mayfield played relatively well, had some ups and downs, but really, when the Bucs are sitting at 3-1 at this point of the season headed into the bye week, not only were we pleasantly surprised, but so was most of the NFL community. The Bucs were off to one of the hotter starts I can remember with a team that we did not expect this from.
Yeah, I mean, I remember sitting there thinking the season prediction show. You know, we both thought, you know, if you're 2-2 at the bye week, you're in pretty good shape. The Bucs were in even better shape sitting at 3-1. And at that point, you were looking saying, okay, you know, you got the bye week. Don't love an early bye week, but it is what it is. That's when it was. So, at that point, sitting at 3-1, coming off like you said, a pretty, like, convincing win against a division rival in their house after a disappointing loss. I think it was big. And the Bucs didn't play perfect. You didn't expect it to be perfect. Still trying to work out, you know, a brand new offensive coordinator, a brand new quarterback, still trying to figure all that stuff out. So didn't really expect it to be completely perfect, you know, for sure. But I definitely think that the Bucs, they defied expectations all season, but I think that was the biggest surprise for me, how fast they came out of the gate. Now, I know they weren't playing the best competition, right? All three of those teams that they beat missed the playoffs ultimately, but at the same time, two of them were road games that they went out and won. And like I said, still trying to work out those new kinks and a new offense and a lot of new pieces, just like you said, that, like, you know, even the guys who were here last year, you had them in different roles or bigger roles. You know, you had Tristan Wirfs switching from the right to the left. You had Luke Goedeke going to right tackle. You had Rashad White being the running back one. You had Logan Hall having a bigger, you know, role. You know, you had a lot of different things. Cade Otton having a bigger role. You had a lot of different things that you were still trying to figure out. So I think being 3-1, and getting off that hot start, I think you could look at that being the reason why the Buccaneers made the playoffs. Their hot start allowed them to have a lull in the middle of the season. And look, the lull wasn't acceptable, but the lull in the middle of the season didn't kill them. If they would have gone 1-3 at the start right, it wouldn't have seemed bad, like terrible at the time. You know, we looked at it like, oh, it's a kind of a tough schedule, right? The Vikings were always going to be tough on the road. The Bears were expected to be improved. And then you played the Saints, who obviously, you know, is always a tough game in New Orleans. And you played the defending NFC champion. You were like, yeah, like 2-2 is great. Like 1-3 is whatever. If they go 1-3 right there, based on how the rest of the season played out, they don't make the playoffs. So being 3-1, getting off of that fast start allowed them to sort of falter a little bit down the stretch. And it wasn't as bad.
I made a claim on the season predictions show that this 2023 Bucs team, with all the uncertainty on the offensive side of the ball, they were going to have to lean on a strong defensive performance, kind of like they did in 2022. You know, that offense was historically bad in 2022, and in my opinion, I still think it is one of the better Bucs defenses of all time, simply because, personally, I don't think they're going to get the credit they deserve for the way that they played in 2022. But in 2023, over these first four games, the defense played pretty well. I'd say week three Monday Night Football, they were more leaky than they should have been. Obviously, DeAndre Swift had a huge day running the football.
Yeah.
But they were probably the biggest reasons I think the Bucs were coming away with some of these victories, only holding New Orleans to 9 points. Chicago scored 17. Minnesota scored 17. But this was kind of that time in the season where every single week we are seeing how the Bucs can produce on the offensive side of the ball, right? You're still pretty strong in your faith with this defense. Expectations with them were about the same the entire season. Coming into the season, people were expecting good things from this defense. And I think over the course of the year, we'll dive into it some more, but they got that. But this is where the offense was really trying to figure some things out. Dave Canales working some things into his game plan, figuring out what didn't work. That week three game against Philly was the first time we saw clearly what a first-year offensive coordinator looks like. And he had to go back to the drawing board. But, you know, these are those games where I think over the first month, I thought this offense was going to end up looking a little bit different because the way the Bucks were winning these games in particular was a lot of ball control, a lot of effective running of the football. And, I mean, you know, the most productive day through the air Baker Mayfield had was week two against Chicago. He threw for 317 yards. But outside of that, week one, he only threw for 173. Week three, he only threw for 146 in that Monday Night Football loss. And in the win against New Orleans, he threw for 246. One of his better games on the road in New Orleans this season, but the run game was a huge factor. And these games, looking at the offense, forecasting what was next, I thought Rashad White was going to develop a little bit more as that three down back that I think we hope he can be.
I'm actually, you know, and before we move on to the next, you know, phase of it, I do want to touch on the defense a little bit, because I think the big thing about the defense was, and we knew it wasn't, you know, like sustainable, the amount of takeaways they were getting early, yeah, you know, in the season, having three against Minnesota in one half of football. I believe they had one or two against Chicago, obviously the one being a pick six by Shaq Barrett. They had two, I believe, against Philly. And then they had, I believe, one or two. I think it's actually two against New Orleans. So a lot of takeaways for this defense early on in the season. And again, we knew that wasn't going to be something that was going to be able to hold up over a 17-game season. That's not possible for any defense. But I thought that was a big reason. So yeah, like you said, I thought, you know, I think complimentary football is the biggest thing I would say. The Bucs protected the football, zero turnovers through the first two games of the season. So the Buccaneers were able to protect the football enough, and they were able to, you know, limit the mistakes and force the other offense to make those mistakes. And they got away from that a little bit, you know, like you said, you know, during the Philly game, and they ended up getting, you know, beat pretty good. And then, you know, they came back and I think an important, and again, with how the season turned out, an important bounce back against New Orleans, just a really, really critical bounce back, because if that game goes another way, New Orleans actually wins the NFC South, because New Orleans would have swept Tampa Bay, and then who knows what would have happened to the futures of Todd Bowles or Baker Mayfield right now if this team doesn't make the playoffs. So I think that bouncing back after your first loss of the season, a tough loss at home, heading to New Orleans, a tough place to play against a team that has given you fits, I think it was an important win there. But yeah, we're going to move on to the, I guess, what, second quarter of the season, you could say. Weird, because we can't. We can't do four quarters anymore because there's not 16 games. There's 17 games now, but we're going to try our best.
So you talked about the importance of that bounce back game against New Orleans. I mean, this just drives the point home. The Bucs come out of the bye week. It's the return of the creamsicles. They've got Detroit.
The second quarter of the season that the Bucs want to forget, I should say.
Yeah. You know, at the beginning of the season when we were doing our season prediction show, we talked about a lot of tough stretches of the season, and I think we expected this to be one of the tougher stretches of the season, but it doesn't get any tougher than losing four games in a row fresh out of the bye week. So Detroit, they came to town and absolutely pounced the Bucks in the creamsicle, 20-6, the final score in that one. A heartbreaker filled with just self-inflicted mistakes against the Atlanta Falcons. They lose that one 16-13, one of the more frustrating games of the year. They lose on primetime against Buffalo in Buffalo. That game final score 24-18. We're not going to waste too much time talking about the Hail Mary there at the end, because fundamentally I think the game was over at that point anyways, but it is what it is. And, oh man, 39-37. They take a loss on the road to rookie quarterback C.J. Stroud, who marches down the field in, what, 38 seconds to go 90 yards for the touchdown score to put Houston over the top. So this was a stark contrast to the 3-1 start the Bucs had presented us, and by the end of this four-game losing streak, I think myself and everyone else around me was convinced that, hey, maybe this Bucs team is a little bit of a fluke this year. Losing four in a row, and we'll talk about this next group of games here in a minute too, but losing four in a row, I mean, there's not a lot of great things you can say about this stretch, aside from the fact that maybe the offense found their rhythm in that game against Houston, putting up 37 points in the loss. I still think their highest scoring game of the season. Yeah, they didn't put up any more points than 37 in a single game like they did in that loss on the road. But other than that, like, this sucked. After that loss to Houston, you came on this show and you declared their season officially over. You did.
Well, actually, I was on suspension then, and thank God I was. But I went on Bucks Nation and I wrote an article, which glad didn't get old takes exposed. But I did declare their season over, and honestly, like, at the time, you know, I truly believed it. Like, that is the type of loss that gets coaches fired. Yeah. Like that is the exact type of loss that gets somebody fired. Losing your fourth straight game, and in that sort of fashion, against a rookie quarterback that threw for the record, right, for a rookie passing yards against you, that is the type of loss that gets a coach fired. And I think, you know, things at that point could have spiraled out of control. Now, I don't want to spoil the next quarter, but, you know, I mean, they did lose two of their next three after that game. But I do think that, you know, that Houston game is where it really could have unraveled. It really could have, because, you know, the loss to Buffalo, it's on the road, short week, and they're playing a divisional game. Buffalo is regarded as a pretty good team. It's a tough one, right? I think even the Detroit one. I mean, Detroit just played in the NFC Championship game last night, you know, so they're a good team. Atlanta, yeah, you shouldn't have lost that game. But then Houston, we didn't really realize what Houston was going to be, right? We didn't know at the time that Houston was going to win the AFC South, and CJ Stroud was, you know, like, we knew he was good, right? We didn't know how good. But this was basically, you know, the coming out party for CJ Stroud.
That was the week that everybody found out CJ Stroud was the real deal.
Because right,
that game-winning, like, drive was on repeat on SportsCenter once every 20 minutes.
Right, like, I'm big into sports cards, and the market for CJ Stroud after that game.
Did you downtown, went, buddy?
Went there
downtown, right? CJ Stroud.
I'm sure. Yeah, that went up to. Oh my God, downtown to Stroud.
Yeah, you're not going to believe me when I say this, but we have a guy at work who's really big into sports cards, and I think 10 times a week I have to hear him talk about getting a downtown CJ Stroud. They've been doing pack openings.
He's just trying to chase it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I've opened a bunch of boxes. I haven't hit one a single downtown. So, good luck. I take anything. But yeah, it's, you know, he was really good. But at the time, you're like, man, it's a bad loss. That is, I mean, even if the Texans were regarded as a great team, you had the lead with 40 some seconds or whatever. That's got to be a win. Like, that just has to be a win. To snap a three-game losing streak, you would have been feeling pretty good about it, right? And instead, it was just the worst loss of the season, I think. Actually, the second worst loss of the season.
I mean, that's your defense. You know, that was one of the games where we came away from it and we're like, listen, that's on Todd Bowles. Like, I know that this defense wasn't playing particularly well that day, but I think this is the time of the season where obviously jobs are brought into question, as you had mentioned. Now let's talk about this next four-game stretch here. So you come out of that four-game losing streak. You do win one against a crippled Tennessee Titans team. I mean, they limped into that game. I think they had 4 out of 5 of their starting offensive linemen were second or third stringers. Will Levis still kind of going through the motions as an NFL quarterback, so he looked a little lost out there.
I think it was his second career start, I think. So, I mean, they won the game 20-6. So, basically, did what you had to do in that game.
Yes. After that win, you go back on the road, tough opponent across the country, the San Francisco 49ers, an eventual Super Bowl Super Bowl team. You lose that game 27-14, and I will say, this game in particular, there were a lot of mixed feelings coming out of it, because headed into this game, like, everybody expected the Bucs to lose. Like, I remember Pewter Report, Scott Reynolds put out an article that literally said, like, hey, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not, like, going to win this football game.
Like, they're going to, like, get over it.
Yeah,
like, they're going to focus on the next week.
Fully expect them to lose this game, but I think a pleasant surprise was that first half performance, and I think this might be the moment in the season. You know, the Tennessee game is one thing, but the big struggle the Bucs had all year was beating the teams that are clearly better than them. You know, Philly at the time, week 3, was clearly better than the Bucs. They came to town and they kicked their ass. Mm-hmm. The Bills, they thoroughly beat Tampa Bay. Detroit thoroughly beat Tampa Bay. San Francisco, in the second half of that game, just like the Lions, they thoroughly beat the Bucks. But that first half, I think, gave a lot of people some hope. And I think it showed a glimpse of what this team would ultimately become later in the season. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was only a one-possession game, if not a tie game, headed into halftime with the Niners on the road.
Yeah, the Niners were up 13-7 on the Buccaneers at halftime. So I think that was the game. And Todd Bowles even mentioned that as end of the year press conference, that like after that San Francisco game, that was sort of like they felt they were close. As it turns out, they were. Now, it would take another week, because as we get in, we will get into, they did lose the very next week. And I will say that was the point, right? They're sitting there at the edge of the cliff, and it was starting to go like this. And you had one thing to do. Two things to do. You either pull yourself up and stabilize, or you go down. And the Buccaneers at that point, had a crossroads. But again, yes, nobody expected the Bucs to win that game, right? On the road, San Francisco, West Coast. You didn't expect the Bucs to win, right? The 49ers were just a better team. But the Bucs in 2022, and they got the doors kicked in. Whereas this year, they showed a little bit more fight, and I think that was encouraging for people. And I think if they had won against the Colts, I think people would have been like really on board with it. But they followed it up with another thing that had you questioning really whether or not, Todd Bowles, Baker Mayfield would even be back, because, the turnovers, I remember at this point, the turnover bug was starting to hit Mayfield a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think it was four games in a row with a turnover.
It was starting to hit him a little bit. And there was some, like I said, the Bucks after a win, sure, but like you beat Tennessee and then you lose the next two. Like it kind of canceled each other out. So Bucks were facing the crossroads there.
Yeah, this loss to Indy was the point of the season where me, as the eternal optimist, like I was fed up with Todd Bowles.
Yeah, they're done.
The coaching inconsistencies, not throwing the challenge flag. That game against Indy was where Mike Evans was on the sideline begging and pleading Todd Bowles to just throw the challenge flag, and he didn't. Hanging on to timeouts, doing all those coaching decisions, all of those nuances that we've gotten frustrated with Bowles before about. To be honest with you, I don't know if that's going to go away in the 2024 season.
It's not going
to
go away.
I think some of those time management issues that a head coach has, like, you can't really fix that. It's just who they are,
You're just going to have to put up with it. It's just, yes. You just have to hope it doesn't kill you too much.
But this loss against Indy, it definitely felt like their last chance to prove that they could be an above-average football team. I was convinced, I looked at this Colts team starting Gardner Minshew, who also had been kind of going through a rough patch. He played inconsistently against the Bucs, but he did not play well enough to win. And that's what frustrated me. I felt like at the time, the Bucs just shot themselves in the foot and ultimately cost them a chance at winning that game. Another loss. And at that point, had lost six of their last seven games. There is not an NFL team. And you can ask around. I don't know. I don't talk to a lot of other guys who do podcasts for other teams. But there is not a lot of NFL teams that could lose six out of their last seven and then continue to talk about a playoff push the way that we were with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the dreaded NFC South. So that game against Indy, I was pissed. But apparently I got pissed at the right time, because the Buccaneers turn around and their next four games were all victories. Some of the most impressive football they played all season down the stretch here. It was a close-fought game. They edge out Carolina with a game-winning field goal, 21-18. The following week, they go to Atlanta. They beat Atlanta to make it 1-1 in the season series, 29-25.
That was it. Right there. And again, it's like the Houston game. They had to score a late touchdown, right? That was the game. Yeah. I still think, even though they beat Green Bay and they beat Jacksonville, right? I still think if they lose that game against the Falcons and the Falcons swept them, I still think that their season is probably done. Just the mentality, I just think the psyche of that football team would have just been crushed. I think this was the turning point.
The Bucs were playing playoff football for the last 2 months of their season. After that game against Indy, you really could not afford any more losses on the season. They're lucky.
Here's the thing. Notice how the next two games after that Atlanta game went.
Yeah.
Doesn't it kind of seem like the pressure kind of went off the Bucs a little bit there, mm-hmm. right? They started to feel less pressure. And because that Atlanta game, like I said, they were down, and then they were able to come back. And then they played two of the best games they played all season against Green Bay and Jacksonville. So I don't know. I don't think that's no coincidence there.
No, I don't think it is either. We talk about playoff football, the mentality that this team had, you know, riding high on a win streak. They tack on two more. Baker plays probably the best game of his career, finishes with a perfect passer rating and 381 passing yards. The first visiting quarterback in NFL history to finish with a perfect passer rating at Lambeau Field. 34-20. They took Green Bay behind the woodshed in that game, and then they did it the following week. I know Jacksonville was beat up, but this was another team that at that time we were looking at who they had left on their schedule, and we're like, listen, if you want to be a legitimate playoff team, you have to be competitive against Green Bay and Jacksonville. Well, not only were they competitive against those teams, they dog-walked them. So obviously, spirits were high headed into this division game here. The final two games of the regular season for Tampa Bay. On my birthday, December 31st, their final home game of the season, they have a chance to win five in a row, clinch the NFC South, and prove all of the S-talkers wrong. And unfortunately, I had to wait a week.
It was like a fart in church, man.
It didn't go over pretty well. I don't know if I've admitted this on the podcast, and I feel dirty doing so, but, you know, this is a safe place. Open line of communication. We try to be as transparent as possible with you guys. I have been a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan for as long as I have been watching the sport of football. I have been to more games than I can remember. 25, 30-plus Bucs games, which I know is nothing compared to a lot of the people who have been, you know, trucking for 30 years. But I've been to my fair share of Bucs games. And I am one of those people, especially if I pay for the goddamn ticket, I'm going to get my money's worth. I'm going to stay for all four quarters. I'm going to see this thing through. I'm going to stay on the ship until the very end. Well, I can tell you what. Maybe it's because it was my birthday and I wasn't in the best mood. Maybe it's because it was my birthday and I kind of bought these tickets on a whim, but I got one hell of a deal for some awesome tickets right on the 45-yard line right behind the Bucs bench. First game in my life, Evan, I have ever left early. Halfway through the third quarter when the Bucs were down 20 points and we were running outside sweeps with Rashad White, I was done. I had seen enough, and I pulled the game up on YouTube TV on my phone, and I walked back to my truck watching the game on my phone. Finished watching the game while I ate an all-star breakfast down the road from the Waffle House right there on Columbus. So it was a tasty afternoon, but, I mean, the Waffle House is really the highlight of my day. The Bucs really crapped the bed on that one, and I think that was... I think that was a point in the season where, you know, I was feeling great about what they had accomplished, the four-game win streak, but that was the game that told me, like, yeah, they're getting there, but they're still not quite there. You know what I'm saying? As far as talking about the ceiling with this Todd Bowles coaching staff, he's expected to be back in 2024, so we talk about how much this team can get better. That game against New Orleans showed me that, like, yeah, there's still a lot this team can do to improve.
Yeah, that game made the Carolina game like look like this Carolina game could determine the next freaking 5 to 10 years of this franchise, right? They lose that Carolina game, everybody's fired. Like everybody would be fired. And it was just, yeah, it was a big letdown. I mean, just a huge letdown. You had a chance to clinch your division in your home stadium against your rival and sweep your rival for the second straight season, and you just simply don't show up. And I believe four turnovers on the day. Simply not good enough. Down 20-0 at one point, like you said, still running the football at 20-0. And like you said, it sort of proved like, yeah, man, we thought, you know, thought they were there and they're kind of not. So it put all the pressure right back on Tampa Bay, right? To play well against Carolina and beat the worst team in the NFL. Like the Panthers had no pressure on them. What do they care? They know their season's over, yeah. Right? You had everything to lose in that game. And honestly, I think the Bucs sort of played like it. And then add on at that point, Baker Mayfield dealing with a rib injury, dealing with an ankle injury. You know, they were not 100% healthy. So I just think everything sort of piled on there. But yeah, that Saints game, that to me was the worst loss of the season. I mentioned how Houston was the worst loss, and then I backtracked and said second worst. To me, that Saints game, not necessarily the performance itself and how they lost, right? Because obviously that way Houston is worse, but it's what the implications were and just how flat and unprepared and unmotivated they looked to play that football game.
Yeah, with everything on the line, you know, at least in Houston, they showed up ready to win that game. They didn't show up ready to play against the Saints.
Yeah, it was just one side of the football that couldn't stop Houston. You know, even though the Saints only scored, you know, however many points, they didn't score a ton, but it seemed like, again, like the defense was just getting bullied out there. You know, it seemed like the Saints were fighting for every blade, every inch of grass, and the Bucs just were, they played like a team that knew that their season wasn't on the line that day, and I think they should have.
Yeah, the pressure was certainly on. Week 18 season finale for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Literally everything on the line. Like, I think this is the most consequential game we have ever covered on the show, yes. Because we were talking
besides the Super Bowl, yes.
Right. We're talking about the difference between a win and a loss here. Like with the Super Bowl, you knew that if they lost, you were going to see the same team next season. You were going to see the same head coach. You were going to see the same quarterback in Tom Brady. You were more than likely going to see most of the same roster.
Let's put it this way. Yeah, the most consequential regular season game we've ever covered.
That's fair. And it's simply because of how different the franchise could potentially look if they lose this game.
Right now. That game is different. It's looking very different right now.
Yeah. Well, luckily the Buccaneers win a tough one. It is a division battle. Baker Mayfield got his ass kicked out there. Only threw for 137 yards that week, but the Buccaneers do come out on top. They shut out Carolina and their high-powered offense.
Failed to score a touchdown, though, right? And I think that was the worry heading into the playoffs. Baker looked good during the four games, right? And then he had two straight games he did not look good. And, you know, it could have been health. It could have been a number of things. But, you know, there was a lot of people that were, you know, thinking, oh, even if the Bucs make the playoffs and they lose the first round, Todd Bowles could be gone anyway. There was people thinking that because of these past two performances. And I think that's also why people, and that's sort of why I, you know, had my skepticism on whether or not the Buccaneers would be able to beat a struggling Eagles team. Because I saw them go out and fail to score a touchdown against the worst team in the NFL, the Panthers. You know, and it was, again, and Anton Winfield making an incredible play. The Panthers would have been up 7-0. What happens in that game if the Panthers are up 7-0? Like, we could, like, literally the Buccaneers right now would have a brand new head coach. And while it wouldn't be official, we would be like, okay, like, are they going to be able to trade up for a quarterback? Like, that's what we would be talking about right now, because it would be completely different.
Yeah, I know we're in the middle of an offensive coordinator search, but there are so many things that would have been different, from the free agents that are potentially coming back to the head coach conversation you had just said. I mean, there would be so much more going on right now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that, to be honest with you, we'd probably still be doing three podcasts a week.
But we wouldn't be doing a season review. We would be doing a press conference review of the brand new head coach, basically.
Exactly. You know, having a conversation about Todd Bowles and the season that he had just had after being fired would seemingly be a waste of time. But luckily, these next two games here in the postseason are exactly why Todd Bowles will be back as head coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2024. Most likely scenario. I think it's like a 90% chance he's back.
90, 95. I'll give 90.
Yeah, I feel a little bit better about that. So
and also Baker Mayfield. I think they're sort of grouped together almost here.
No, you are correct. So thus ends the regular season. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers win the NFC South for the third time in a row. The first time in franchise history they have accomplished such a feat with a 9-8 record.
And they became the only NFC team to make the playoffs in four straight seasons. So
yes, they did. Last four seasons. Congratulations, a historic accomplishment for the Bucs. But let's talk about these next two games. Yes, two games here in the postseason. In the wild card matchup, we knew the Bucs were going to be hosting an NFC East opponent, but we didn't know if it was going to be Dallas or Philly. Luckily, it was the Birds. And just like it was when they played them in 2021, they kicked the dog shit out of Philly. Excuse my language, but I don't know how else to describe it. 32-9, the final score of this game. Baker Mayfield throws for 337. You know, this was at the most critical time of the season, I think, when the most people were doubting Todd Bowles and this Bucs team. You know, the national consensus is that everyone knew the Bucs were going to win this game because, let's face it, the Philadelphia Eagles limped into the postseason.
They were reeling, yeah. They
1-5 over their last six games. Like, I think a lot of people saw this coming. But as a Bucs fan, as someone who had talked about this team every single week, as soon as they got ahead of steam and they played an opponent that you felt like they could come out on top against, they would crap the bed. Mm-hmm. They would show up not ready to play. You know, they'd make self-inflicted mistakes that they could not get over. And I think this just goes to show the credit that Todd Bowles deserves to get here for the second half of the season the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had. Not only were the Bucs ready to play, but they played arguably one of their best games all season here in the opening round of the postseason against the defending NFC champions. And it was a dominant victory, 32-9.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And again,
without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There was a lot of skepticism on whether or not they'd be able to do it, even though that the Eagles were struggling. And honestly, like, they got the luck of the draw there, because even though Dallas lost in the first round, and like, I get it, right? Like, they lost in the first round. It could have happened to Tampa, whatever. But I just, based on matchups and stuff, I think you had to like the Eagles matchup better than the Cowboys. If you're the Bucs, you know, Bucs fan, we want them to see the Bucs advance. You got the right matchup, because I'm not positive they beat Dallas just because of how Dallas would have matched up with them. I don't think it would have like last year's wild card, but not sure if they win. So, you know, you play who you play, and they got Philly, and they took care of Philly. And that's exactly, it's exactly the type of game that I think Baker Mayfield needed, for sure Baker Mayfield needed. You know, after two lackluster weeks, I think he needed that performance against a good, on a big stage, against a team that, look, Eagles still had a ton of talent. Like, a ton of talent still. They just weren't playing good football. And that's sort of the thing that I talked about, you know, with guys like Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, about how, you know, you can be good players having bad seasons. I think the Eagles had a lot of good players. There's a lot of bad seasons. So, yeah, I think Baker Mayfield needed that. I also think Todd Bowles, with his defensive game plan, stopping the run with those six-man fronts, making sure Jalen Hurts didn't beat him too much with his legs. It helped. A.J. Brown was out for sure, but I think both guys there really, really benefited from that type of performance. And honestly, it would have had to have been pretty bad in Detroit the next week for either guy, for like Bowles' job to not be safe or Baker's job to not be guaranteed next year, because it would have had to, there was a world, but it by that point, I think this game right here is what clinched both of their futures, I guess. Obviously, Mayfield can still sign somewhere else, but, you know, if he does, it's going to be for a lot of money. Whereas if he didn't, you know, who knows what happens there.
Yeah, Bowles defense really stepped up. They did a great job at stifling Philly's offense. And for the second season in a row, Philly comes out of the postseason firing both of their coordinators. Offensive and defensive coordinator are gone. And who did they end up hiring?
Kellen Moore, obviously, you know, the Buccaneers had interest in, and then for defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio. So, I mean, two pretty good ones. So we'll see if they're able to bounce back.
So the following week, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, one game away from the NFC Championship. It is another rematch with a team they had already faced this season, which had a lot of people dubbing this playoff run the revenge tour for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Got to meet the Eagles again, a team that had gotten the better of them in week three. And they mollywopped them. Well, they were hoping to do that against, what does Pat call them? The brand new Lions under head coach Dan Campbell this year. And I got to tell you, this Lions team was definitely special. But the biggest question coming into this game is that we knew the Lions at this point were head and shoulders way better than Philly. Like, way better. The Bucs took advantage of a team that was in a slump, and they played the same great football they did against Green Bay and Jacksonville, but you took advantage of a bad team. What is that going to look like when you can try and play your best ball against, I mean, I know they were one game short, but a Super Bowl-ready team.
On the road.
Yeah, not only that, on the road in Ford Field, which was one of the toughest places to play here in the postseason. Mm-hmm. It's incredible that we're even saying that, because who would have thought that, you know, the Lions in Ford Field would be one of the tougher playoff destinations?
Yeah, who would have thought we'd be talking about the Lions losing the NFC Championship game?
Right, right. So there were a couple of questions headed into this matchup. First, how the Bucs were going to look, how prepared they would be, I think was the biggest question. But ultimately, what plagued them in their final game of the season, a 31-23 loss on the road to Detroit. really the same things that plagued them the entire season when we talked about what kept them from getting to that next level. And I would ultimately say it is just self-inflicted mistakes. It is, you know, leaving points out on the field and unfortunately coming up empty, not making the most of every opportunity you're given. Because when that happens against a bad team like Jacksonville or Green Bay in that point in the season where it's like, yeah, it's not a perfect game offensively. You came up short on a couple of opportunities, but you still won by 25 points. You know, this team's still bad enough to where it's not going to kill you at the end of the day. But we said time and time again, you cannot make the same mistakes against a playoff opponent and expect to win. Well, you know, Detroit was the better team in the divisional round, and unfortunately the Buccaneers could not dig themselves out of the hole. An early interception from Mike Evans, well, from Baker Mayfield, but deflected off of the hands of Mike Evans. Yeah. And then with 2 minutes left to go, the Bucs had an opportunity to drive down the field and I think tie the game. And yep. Unfortunately, we get a quick interception from Baker Mayfield. Now, we haven't talked about this either. I do want to put it to bed. I think it's pretty asinine. I think the conversation is pretty ridiculous. I think it's been blown out of proportion. The Todd Bowles hanging onto a timeout. You know, the Lions ran a play on accident, so they could have called a timeout, and you could have given your offense a chance to go down the field. But my opinion, and I'd love to hear what you think about this and the game as well here. The game, I've said this before on today's show, I'm going to say it again. The game was fundamentally over when Baker Mayfield threw the interception. And I'm not going to say, I'm not going to drag Baker Mayfield and say that like, this and that. I'm just saying that this whole argument about the timeout that Todd Bowles kept in his pocket, in my opinion, is pretty stupid. And it's not the reason the Bucs lost this game.
No, I agree. I'm not going to spend much time on it. Yeah, it's look, they at the end of the day, like, yeah, there would have been a few seconds, a little bit left, no timeouts, even a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. It wasn't going to happen. Like, it wasn't going
to
happen.
Oh, but you know, there's the crowd saying, oh, but as a head coach, you owe your team a chance to go out there and try and win the game. And I totally understand it, but at the end of the day, there are more fans upset about this than any player or staff member or coach that I have seen. You know, I really do feel like if that bench felt like they could go out there with the 8 seconds they would have had left and try and make something happen, they would have been a little bit more vocal about it, but they weren't. Nobody said anything except for the fans.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, in that, you know, let's go back to the game. Lions won the turnover battle. Dobbs, who's going to be a big thing. Bucks couldn't get pressure on Jared Goff. The Lions continue to get pressure on Baker Mayfield. Mayfield held the ball a little bit sometimes. Sometimes the offensive line broke down. And, you know, ultimately that was the difference. I mean, I would say the turnover battle and the sacks, I would say, were the biggest difference in this one. So, you know, it's it just came up short, but you know, you fought hard, like, you know, in a tough environment, tough place to play against a really good team. So, and against a team who for, you know, half of football yesterday was looking like they were going to meet the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So, you know, clearly, I mean, you know, they're a really good team, and the Bucs were able to hold their own, just, you know, not there yet. And that's okay. Like, they weren't expected to be there yet. Obviously you can be bummed that they lost. Like, that's fine, whatever. But like, they weren't expected to be there yet. Like, you know, I think, you know, even if somebody would have told you that they were going to make the playoffs and win a playoff game, you probably would have been like, I don't know, you know, like maybe, but I'm not sure about that. Right. So they exceeded expectations anyway. So I don't think there's anything, you know, I think you hold your head high. Obviously, a loss is a loss. At the end of the day, it ended your season and you're not going to be holding the trophy. And that's the ultimate goal. But hold your head high and know that, you know, it's not a morale victory. It's not a moral victory, but it's something that I guess you can sort of look towards the offseason of saying we're closer than maybe a lot of people thought, maybe even closer than we thought, right? Because I don't know about the expectations within the building, but like, I'm not sure there was a ton of people that expected them to. Because like, you didn't know, right? You didn't know how Canales was going to do. You didn't know how Baker Mayfield was going to do. You didn't know how a lot of these defensive young guys like Christian Izzy and Logan Hall, Yaya Diaby, Kalijah Kancey, Sarasi Adonis, KJ Britt. Like, you didn't know how those guys were going to do. You didn't know how Luke Getteke was going to transition and play. You didn't know how Tristan Wirfs was going to do, right? Go moving over. Was he going to be the same player? So I think, you know, yeah, he probably exceeded the expectations of a lot of people in that building. And I think it's a nice building block for the offseason. Now, I mean, you know, once next season begins, the 2023-24 season doesn't matter. Because it's a brand new season, but you know, for this offseason, I think you can head into it, head into free agency, head into draft, knowing that, okay, like, we think we're maybe a little bit closer. That doesn't mean they're going to be doing win now moves, you know, trading draft picks for veterans and restructuring all these deals and pushing all this cap, you know, like they did in the Brady years. I don't think that necessarily, but I do think it will mean, like, yeah, like, we're not really going to be sitting here rebuilding like some people think, or releasing veterans that can help us, or like, yeah, we're going to make an effort to keep Levante David, and you're going to keep an effort to make Mike Evans. And, you know, so I do think that's something that, again, you can hold your head high on.
Yeah, they exceeded the expectations of just about everyone. Even the most positive people who were not Baker Mayfield stans were talking about the idea of winning the division, but then getting absolutely clocked in the first round. You know, we had talked time and time again when going back and forth on Todd Bowles' job security, you know, how secure is his job going to be when at the time we felt like the Bucs were inevitably going to win the division and get bounced in the first round? And it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It shows improvement off of that team in 2022 with Tom Brady as quarterback. For the Bucs to win games this year, a lot of things had to go right. And a lot of those things did go right. And at the end of the day, I will say this. Todd Bowles deserves credit for a lot of it. Todd Bowles deserves credit, most of the credit, for the turnaround this Buccaneers team had in the second half of the season, because there were so many opportunities in 2023 where they could have bowed out, they could have just quit, they could have known that, hey, you know, this isn't the best year, it's going to be hard to rally here and win a lot of games down the stretch when you lose the last six of your seven. But it didn't happen that way. It didn't. There was a lot of development from players this year that I also think was crucial to the Buccaneers defense, especially on the defense, or crucial to the Buccaneers' success, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Sorry, this is the point of the show where my words start getting jumbled together. On the defensive side of the ball, Antoine Winfield Jr., first-team All-Pro. Should have been in the Pro Bowl, but that's okay. His best season, and a season that's going to get him paid a lot of money for hopefully a long time by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kalijah Kancey and Yaya Diaby. That development does not happen by accident, and I do think when we talk about the rookie season those guys had, as a defensive-minded head coach, Todd Bowles deserves credit. I mean, who's out there coaching those guys up every week?
Yeah. No, I here's the tough thing. And I do – Todd Bowles definitely deserves credit, for sure. He absolutely deserves credit. However, you know, you say, okay, Todd Bowles deserves, you know, most of the credit. I just don't know if I can get there – because during that four-game win streak, it was the offense that really powered it. And without that four-game win streak, Todd Bowles is probably looking for another job right now.
We talked about the regression of the defense that time of year. I mean, part of the reason the Bucs were losing that game, those games, is because they couldn't stop the run. Their secondary was one of the worst in the NFL for like a month straight. You know, there was a lot going wrong, but they also did stiffen up when they needed to there at the end of the season. And I thought they were playing well, playing better complementary football down the stretch than they had all season. Because for the first 8-9 weeks, you know, you're kind of figuring out where it felt like we'd have a week where the offense took one or two steps forward. Dave Canales as a play caller comes out and really shows an impressive game. And then the following week you have like Monday Night Football against Philly where Dave Canales looked like a first-year offensive coordinator. There were more than a few games this season where Dave Canales looked like an offensive coordinator. And we'll talk about the offense in full here in just a second. But I do agree, and I think you make a valid point. But at the end of the day, like, he is a head coach, and I think as a head coach this season, he did a lot of the head coaching stuff fairly well. You know, we can argue here and there about how prepared they were for the Saints game at the end of the season. But aside from that, I don't think there were too many miscues that I was incredibly angry about down the stretch from old Bowles.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason he's back next year. Like, you know, that there is. So we'll see where they can go from here. And you know, but to me, I think next year, looking at 2024, and again, we don't know what the roster is going to look like, but it still could look a lot different. Like, I mean, you know, Baker Mayfield, yeah, we think he's going to be back, but there's a possibility he's not. Who knows? You don't know what's going to happen with that market. You know, when contract negotiations, things can go sideways all the time, but. You know, I think you want to see progress next year now, though. So now it's up to, you know, it's up to not only Todd Bowles, but it's up to Jason Light on how do you improve this roster? How do you improve that pass rush, right? How do you make sure that this team doesn't regress because, oh, your offensive line isn't as good because you didn't go out and find a left guard, you know, or oh, you didn't account for this or that, you know, how do you improve the roster? And then for Bowles, again, how do you do this again, right? How do you go 9-8 or better? You know, I would think you'd be expecting better. How do you win the NFC South for a fourth straight year and make the playoffs for a fifth straight season, which would be a franchise record, five straight seasons in the playoffs? So how do you do that? I think that's what he's going to need to, you know, to keep his job again for the following season. And, you know, now the pressure's on him again because now the expectations look, they're going to be raised. The expectations are now going to be raised for everybody in that organization. And I don't, you know, just making the playoffs might not be good enough in the eyes of some. So, rather than if it would have been this year, right? This year, just, oh, making the playoffs, wow, that's a great year. All right. No matter what happens, the playoff game, whatever. Then to win that playoff game, you know, I think it raised the expectations for next year. So I am curious to see, you know, how they attacked this offseason and how they, you know, fill the pieces, knowing a bit more certainty, right? Like I think you're gonna know Baker Mayfield probably is back. Mike Evans is back. Now it is off to a rocky start, right? Losing your offensive coordinator, not knowing exactly what type of offense you're gonna run, but you know, I also think there's some positive there too.
Yeah, before we put a letter grade on the 2023 season, let's just recap very quickly the season that the offense had under offensive coordinator Dave Canales, who ended up taking the head coaching job in Carolina. And I will say this. There was a lot of buzz during the season about Dave Canales as a head coach candidate. Seemed like the general consensus is that, like, yeah, he could be a candidate, but this year it would be a shock if a team goes out on a limb for him. But the connections in Carolina, I think, just make too much sense in the situation. You know, with them hiring his buddy as GM, someone he spent a lot of time with in Seattle, it felt inevitable. You know, when you have a chance to double your salary and work alongside a good buddy of yours, I don't care how bad that situation may be in Carolina, you know, he's a head coach, and there's only 32 of those in the world in the NFL. So I don't blame him for taking the job. But when we look at the season as a whole, you know, realtor Dave Zussman has really been giving Canales hell here in the live chat, talking about his inconsistencies as an offensive coordinator. And I will agree to an extent, yes, there was a lot of inconsistencies, but I think a lot of the troubles he had this year just simply came from inexperience, and he ate crow. He was the first one to tell you that. But I mean, if this is, you know, a rocky year for a first-year offensive coordinator and Baker Mayfield has his best career season throwing over 4,000 yards and 28 touchdowns, there's a lot of give and take here. And, you know, I really do think that during his time in Tampa Bay, being hired by his buddy in Carolina definitely helps him in that opportunity. But is it safe to say that overall, Dave Canales was an overwhelming success? Like, did Todd Bowles really knock it out of the park with that hire? Because in my opinion, he did. I was a big fan of Canales, and under the assumption he was going to be back next season, I also don't think it was unfair to expect improvement and maybe expect him to get over some of the mistakes and inexperience factors he had this past season.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could put that, you know, you could credit Bowles with that. It was a good hire. It was a risk. I mean, risk. I mean, hiring a guy who's never an offensive coordinator, never an offensive play caller was a risk, especially when if that didn't work out, you were likely looking for work elsewhere. So it was definitely a risk, and it paid off. So I think that definitely is something that you can credit Bowles with, have a notch on Bowles' belt for sure.
Let's put a letter grade on the 2023 Tampa Bay Buccaneers season. I've been kind of mulling over it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I want to be fair, but I also want to remember what my expectations were at the beginning of the season. So I'm going to give it an A-. At the end of the day, the Bucks exceeded every expectation I had. You know, I, between the two of us, I have often been looked at as the more optimistic when forecasting how the Bucks may or may not do for a particular season. I picked them to go 7-10, not win the division, miss the postseason. And I don't remember if I included in my prediction if Bowles would be back as head coach, but at the end of the day, he is.
I don't think we did that.
I don't think so either. I thought 7-10. Honestly, I think a 7-10 record missing the postseason.
I think you sort of speak for yourself. Or...
Yeah. So I'll just stop right there. But I think this season was a success. I think, you know, the fact that the Buccaneers not only showed improvement from 2022, but they have now shown that with a stable atmosphere, they can improve. Like, you know, the whole Arians thing, it happened very quickly because of Tom Brady. Like, 2019, 7-9. You miss the postseason. You have a quarterback that throws for over 5,000 yards. Mm-hmm. 33 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. You know, that was a 7-9 football team that if they didn't have a quarterback who turned the ball over 30-plus times, maybe they could have been in contention for the postseason, and you don't know how much better they would have been. Well, 2020, you found out that with a better quarterback, they could be a Super Bowl champion. So the improvement was expected. Like, it wasn't as much of a conversation about how much the Bucs are going to improve in 2020 because they had Tom Brady. The expectations went from winning the division to winning the Super Bowl, and they did it in one season. So, like, you kind of got your payoff very quickly. Yeah. And after that, it's like, okay, well, how can we improve? Well, you can go back and you can sign all your players and gear up for another run, which they did. And they played fairly well, lost a competitive game in the divisional round to the LA Rams, the eventual Super Bowl champions. It's okay. 2022 is a disaster. but since Todd Bowles has been head coach, from 2022 to 2023, they improved. And here we are, 23, looking into 24, expecting even more improvement. That's a place here in the Bucs fan base that we have not found ourselves in a very, very long time. And it has me excited for the future for the first time in a long time. This is the fun part of team building. And I think if the Bucs knock it out of the park with some good free agent signings, maybe a couple of extra pass rushers, you do some organizing on the offensive line there, maybe a couple more weapons for Baker Mayfield. This is a team that I think we're going to be expecting to win 10-plus games next year. And it feels justified. So I will give them an A-. They exceeded my expectations for sure. Great season.
Yeah, I'll also give them an A-. I was going to say A, but I do think A-minus is fair. Yeah, they exceeded my expectations even more. I picked them to win, you know, 6 games. I picked them to go 6-11. So, yeah, they, you know, I do think, again, you know, the expectations are going to be raised. But as far as expectations for this coming season, I didn't know what to expect. And again, a lot of things had to go their way for sure. But a lot of things did go their way. So while losing Dave Canales hurts, I do think that, yeah, they did a great job. I thought a lot of their guys stepped up, and that's what you want to see. So I am going to say, yeah, A-minus here.
Well, I believe that's just about going to do it for this year's edition of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers season review show here on the Cannon Fire podcast. I want to say thank you to everybody hanging out with us in the live chat. Al Bundy, Realtor Dave Zussman, San Anto Gatto, Brutal Ass Bucks, the biggest Baker Mayfield fan that we know here in the YouTube Buccaneers community. We appreciate you guys chiming in. And any final thoughts here before we look ahead to our offseason full of coverage?
No, not really. Like I said, just keep an eye on, you know, what we got here as far as videos go, video content goes. I'm going to be doing the positional reviews, so keep an eye out for that. And, you know, we'll see where the OC search takes them, and we'll be covering that. You know, I mean, I would expect them to have an offensive coordinator before the Super Bowl, so I expect another podcast, you know, covering that or something else sometime, you know, before then. So, yeah, for sure. Going to have a lot of offseason content.
Follow our show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show and, of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucs news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucs_daily. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL and check out his written work at BucsNation.com. I know it's that time of year where everything starts slowing down a little bit, but what have you got in the hopper for this week?
Yeah, so we're going to be taking a look at the Buccaneers free agent priorities, which I actually did a video on. I did a video on that, so going to be looking at that, the free agent priorities, and then also going to be taking a look at Jason Light in the offseason that he had, because we talked about, you know, how Todd Bowles and everybody nailed it out of the park, but, you know, Jason Light really did a good job too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we went this entire season review show. I don't think we said Jason Light's name once.
No, no.
Which was a crime, because at the end of the day, Jason Light deserves a lot of credit for what the Bucs were able to do this season as well, holding strong in his faith of his head coach. And obviously the first round, well, first, second, third round draft picks for Tampa Bay this season, that 2023 draft class, was a huge part of success on both sides of the ball. Cody Mauch looking to improve on the offensive line. Kalijah Kancey, Yaya Diaby, giving us a lot to be excited about, as well as the undrafted free agents. Like that, a lot of that credit goes to Jason Light. Last but not least, though, you can find myself, Instagram and Twitter, at Rheticus, Rhettakus. If you follow me, I will follow you back. But subscribe to us here on YouTube for more great Tampa Bay Buccaneers content. We have got an off-season full of coverage for you guys on the way, and look forward to bringing it to you every step of the way. I'm your host, Rip Matthews, signing off with my co-host, Evan Wanish. We will talk to you in the next one. Until then, and as always, thank you so much for listening, and go Bucks.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.